Elizabeth Mattis Namyal has studied and practiced the Buddha Dharma for more than 30 years under the guidance of Zigar Khandrol Rinpoche. Elizabeth is retreat master at Longchen Jigme Samten Ling in southern Colorado. She has an extensive teaching schedule and is the author of The Power of an Open Question. Elizabeth says the Buddhist tradition has the most humorous and radical methods for those longing to do whatever it takes to live a healthy and compassionate life. She is thoughtful and delightful. She was educated at Naropa University in Boulder, and here, in her new book, The Logic of Faith, Elizabeth explores the teachings on interdependence by way of offering a new way of looking at things by drawing us out of the narrow tunnel of self-absorption into broader awareness. Everyone has a relationship with dependent arising. Let's find out more about what that means in our conversation today with Buddhist author, teacher, and contemporary voice, Elizabeth Mattis Namyal. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women, a program featuring the lives and perspectives of women, local, national, and international. My name is Danielle Orr, and I'm speaking with Elizabeth Mattis Namyal about her new book, The Logic of Faith, out by Shambhala. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women. Elizabeth, hi.
Hi, Danielle. So nice to talk to you again. Thanks for having me.
Fantastic to hear your voice. Congratulations on your new book.
Thank you so much.
And so let's talk about the new book, Logic of Faith, A Buddhist Approach to Finding Certainty Beyond Belief and Doubt. You say that you believe faith is a topic that's in desperate need of examination. Would you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, of course. You know, that idea came from my own personal inquiry into the nature of faith because I, just even as a young child, had these bigger experiences, which I don't think are special. I think everyone has these sometimes. And children in particular often have experiences where they just feel connected and present and that they feel there's something bigger. I remember when I was young, I used to talk about these experiences to my mom and describe them as that I felt very tall. I think what I was trying to say is I just felt a part of everything. And in the book, I call these experiences grace. But then, you know, as you grow into your life, you start to adapt certain, labels for experiences. And, you know, people begin to so-called educate you in certain ways, which, of course, is very important. But I noticed that I started to adapt a lot of ideas around this experience, around shoulds and shouldn'ts and, you know, religious ideas and dogmas and different things like that. And then at some point, you know, as I began to search and understand this bigger experience more and why sometimes I didn't have it, I started to see that faith is an experience for me and faith is a cultural narrative. We're quite different. And I got curious about that and wanted to explore it. And I started to notice that in the world, faith can be a very bad word. Like faith, if you look it up in the dictionary, you'll find many definitions that vary and are opposing, like dogma or fundamentalism or doctrine. And then you also find, you know, spiritual awakening and, you know, trust and confidence and conviction. So those are, you know, groups of two very opposing ideas. So I got curious about that and felt we can't just dismiss this word so easily. We need to see what this means to us because these bigger experiences and talking about them are important. And also the notion of faith has to do with the human condition and how we actually have to live in faith because we don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. And, we're, you know, whatever we see or experience really depends on, you know, who is experiencing it. And so, you know, the world doesn't necessarily lend itself to being known in a determinate way. Mm-hmm. So faith is I wanted to look at faith in the context of the human condition.
I love how you call it the F word.
Yeah. I call it the F word because some people, when you bring up the topic, almost feel insulted, mm-hmm. like you're insulting their intelligence. Mm-hmm. Like once I was doing an online course on faith in Tricycle Magazine. This was a long time ago. And then there's a blog and, you know, I respond to people's questions or read their comments. And one guy was saying that he hated the whole idea of faith because it's what his grandmother did. It was like mm-hmm. he thought of it as a blind faith, or mm-hmm. perhaps that's how he interpreted his grandmother's devotion to, you know, however she expressed that. So I've had a lot of that. Mm-hmm. Just people just shut down. There's no curiosity at all to even opening up a word because we assume we all see it in the same way. But I think in this book, I look at it as it all depends on the context.
Yeah.
You know, what something means.
And have you had trouble with faith? You've been a practitioner of the Buddhist tradition for a very long time. What does that look like for you when that happens?
Yeah, well, sometimes when I think of faith as an experience, what I have been calling faith, you know, I feel quite clear and confident. And at other times, I have trouble with it myself. For example, you know, I'll pick up a text, even a Buddhist text, and it will say, you should have faith or something like that. And I feel, mm-hmm. you know, what if faith doesn't arise? What if you feel you see something, for example, in your spiritual community that you don't understand, or you read something that doesn't make sense to you, or, you know, just you don't feel it. You don't feel the emotion of faith or the connectedness of faith or what have you. Then is that a problem? You know, so I kept running into these own limitations in my own mind, actually. So, yeah, I've had doubt, and yeah. I'm interested in exploring it.
And when that happens, you said something really interesting. You were talking about portals and actually the wisdom of Pratitya Samutpada, which is dependent arising, is like a portal into a completely new way of understanding your mind and its world based on direct experience. Can you talk about that a little bit? It's jumping ahead a little bit ahead of my questions, but we're going spontaneous, like you said.
Yeah, okay, no problem. Well, you know, maybe I should explain Pratitya Samutpada first. And this is what I was curious about was how to look at faith, how to explore it without shutting down around dogmas or ideas. Because often when we think of faith, we think of belief in something. And so I wanted to bring the kind of Buddhist tradition of inquiry to the question. And the Buddhist tradition of inquiry doesn't shut down around beliefs and ideas or doubts. So let me just say something about this first, actually. So I think a lot of the reason that people have trouble with faith is that people associate it with, I guess, religion. Mm-hmm. If you even look at the root right. meaning of religion, it means to reconnect. But we have these kind of fixed ideas about what things mean. So we look at faith and we think we have to have faith in an idea and then we have to stick to that principle, and yet the world is changing and challenging and rambunctious. You know, it doesn't necessarily fit our ideals. So, you know, how do we work with that? Like, how do we work with the fact that, you know, originally the teachings on Christianity were probably based on some really direct experiences of grace or just a bigger human experience, and then they turn into dogmas, you know? Then we feel like we have to believe in them, and then if you don't, you go to hell. And, you know, this kind of rigid thinking arises, but our understanding maybe originally came from a direct experience. And it's interesting because the Buddha Dharma, when it's really practiced authentically, is not meant to be a belief system. Like the Buddha said, you know, the path is like this, like a boatman. You know, a boatman uses the boat as a vehicle to row across a river, but then he doesn't keep it on his back after he reaches the shore. So in other words, the path should actually look like an inquiry and like a vehicle to understanding something, but we shouldn't cling on to it as a truth. So why the Buddhist teachings are so fascinating to me has to do with their means, the skillful means for awakening. They're not based on a clinging to ideas and being based on right and wrong, but just a way to awaken. And so, you know, my idea, you know, my own beliefs and doubts arose within my past had something to do with my own misunderstanding or something that someone else said, or, you know, I had to try to reconcile things that I saw in the Dharma with the actual authentic Dharma and my own experience.
Absolutely. And the book is, you start with explaining that dependent arising comes from the earliest first teaching of the Buddha. Would you explain what dependent arising is, actually?
Yes, yes, absolutely. So when the Buddha, at the dawn of the Buddha's awakening, he had this very deep insight, and this very deep insight into the nature of things, like how things are, is really central and essential to all aspects and traditions of Buddhist practice and thought. So the insight was that everything is based on causes and conditions. There's nothing that exists in a vacuum. Everything is dependent on other things. Like, you can never find anything that exists outside the nature of dependent arising, pratityasamutpada. Let me give you some examples of this, because this is something that requires a little bit of breaking open, you know?
And as always, I mean, one thing I love about Buddhism is that anything you don't understand right out of the gate, that's your inquiry. It's an invitation to go and learn more.
Exactly.
So please, go right ahead.
Exactly. So the Buddha said, and it's in the sutras, you know, he said, this being, B-E-I-N-G, this being that becomes, from the arising of this, that arises. This not being, that becomes not. From the cessation of this, that ceases. So what this sounds very cryptic in a certain way, but what it means is that everything is dependent. It all depends. What's going to happen next? It all depends. What something means? It all depends. So in the sutras, he gave an example of two bundles of reeds leaning up against each other to signify, for example, if one bundle falls, the other will fall as well. But this gets very deep and precise. For example, there's the practice or the practice of analyzing and looking for something that exists in and of itself, that's not made of parts, that doesn't change, and that is not influenced or interrupted by other causes and conditions. So, for example, if you look at the human body, you see that it's not one thing. Even science says this, that there are many, many parts working together to find balance and gravity. And the reason we move is because it's made of parts. Like, if it was an actual whole, it wouldn't move at all. It would be inert, you know? So we're looking deeply into what we assume to be a body, and we find that there's so much going on in there, and even these parts are made of parts, and those parts are made of parts, and so on. And then we also look at how our thoughts and perceptions arise in dependence upon objects. So we have what we call our inner world and our outer world, but our inner world is influenced by our outer world, and our outer world is dependent on our inner world, and so this is how we have experience. And then things are constantly dynamic and changing, and that everything finds meaning and purpose only on a context. So this is important. Let me just give one example of this. So, you know, nowadays there's so much coming up about racism and sexism, and it's wonderful, you know, to be able to look at, open up and expose some things about our culture that have been harmful or painful for all of us. So, you know, sometimes you watch the news and you feel really heavy, and you also maybe feel all kinds of things. I mean, it's not just one thing. But a few weeks ago, I was feeling, you know, a little bit heavy about everything. Mm-hmm. So I decided to watch some stand-up comedy. So I turned on the Dave Chappelle's new stand-up comic act on Netflix. And, you know, he takes the heaviest topics,
right,
and begins to, it's totally, completely politically incorrect. And it is such a relief to be able to actually look at something and laugh, because you see that it's also a drama. You know, like, you can also, you can see that there's a certain, you can laugh at anything, like, but only in that context. So in that context, it's okay. Now, if you take those jokes out of that context and blurt them out on the subway or something, it's going to be very unhelpful and painful. But it's just that things, it all depends on the context, what something means.
Mm-hmm. And I love how in the book you actually offer some guided meditation towards that inquiry. And I think that's, they're really amazing meditations. And I just like to say that you are listening to Through the Eyes of Women on KHSU. My name is Danielle Orr, and I'm speaking with Elizabeth Mattis Namyal about her new book, The Logic of Faith, A Buddhist Approach to Finding Certainty Beyond Belief and Doubt. So inquiry, that's one of your favorite things to do.
Yes. It's very much a part of the Buddha Dharma. That's why I think I'm very traditional practitioner, actually.
Well, you're very, you're devoted. And so what is the difference maybe between devotion and faith? Is there a difference?
Huh, that's a really good question. I guess, you know, again, it could mean different things to different people, but
sure.
I always think of devotion having a particular object, like you have devotion in something or to something, like a teacher, not, and it's not necessarily just because you have devotion in that it's blind, but you see, you appreciate and have gratitude for someone who has done so much for you, or to an idea. Like, I feel, actually, it's interesting, I feel devotion toward these teachings. I feel devotion toward inquiry because I have a longing to understand something about my mind and understand something about, you know, how my suffering arises and, how, you know, where does this bigger feeling of grace come from? Mm-hmm. I have this devotion to grace. So even though this is an analytical meditation, it's, you know, analysis to me in this tradition is like devotional, looking deeply into things. Whereas for me, faith, I guess, is a broader understanding. Well, you see in the book, I move from faith to faith thing, like faith is a verb. And I think for me, faith, you know, is critical for the human condition. Like I say that even people who are atheists, you know, or they have faith in their ideas. Like, how could you not have faith and be a human being and live in this world? Or, right. You know, like Tinley Nobroom, she says in his book, cows have faith in grass. Like, you know, we're dependent, so we have to have faith. Mm-hmm. We're dependent on the world in which we live. So how can we not have faith? So to be able to rest, I think, because faith means we don't know, but to be able to rest without knowing is, I think, faithing mm-hmm. in some way. Thinking it's true, thinking it's not true. Faith is another alternative to me.
And we all are touched by, as you say, the beauty and pain of life. And rather than trying to live around that, that's how grace is created, because you lean into it, as they say.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking that, you know, if our ordinary kind of MO is, you know, to grasp and reject our experience, then we don't have any transformation spiritually, so to speak.
That's what spirituality is for, right? Transformation.
Yeah, that's what I would think. Otherwise, what, like, why bother? Yeah, so like, how do we bear witness to the suffering in life?
Right.
You know, how do we do that is, you know, this is what this tradition is about. It's about looking deeply into what you think something is and finding out it might not be what you thought it was. So, you know, we have a tendency, for example, to what I call in the book reify an object. So somebody does something you don't like, and immediately you have a very strong idea about who you are that you hold to. But when we put that in the context of the nature of dependent arising, of course, you can't really remove any one thing or experience from its own nature, because everything, in a way, is made of. Just everything is the play of dependent arising. But if you begin to move out of this kind of solidified or reified view of who someone else is, you begin to see that there's more dimension there. And the more you open it up, the more you become free of your own kind of negative emotions that arise from just seeing them as an enemy. And in my other book, I remember I put example of, like, in the military, soldiers are trained to objectify the enemy. Because if you look at a soldier on the opposing side and you see him as someone's father or brother or son, you know, and you look into his eyes and he becomes very human, and the negative emotions
will arise.
Game's over,
right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That's just one example.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so this whole thing is like when we begin to infuse wisdom, the view of wisdom. This, what we're talking about here is the wisdom aspect of the tradition. If it's about not reifying, not deciding that you know what something is, because if you look at the nature of dependent arising, you see that things are fathomless.
Okay, so that's the point. The point is, if you look at dependent arising as how everything, you know, causes and conditions come together, then you can look deeper.
Yeah, the mind doesn't grasp. It's like this openness, but intelligent, because you're seeing, like we always say, someone with an open mind is more intelligent than a fundamentalist who closes down and can't bear the complexity of another person, of another idea. You know, this is all how anger and attachment and so forth arise, mm-hmm. is from shutting down around the nature of the object. But what they say in this tradition is it's a misunderstanding of the nature of the object, and that everything is open dimensional, and we are always influencing and influenced by the world in which we live.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you can see that, the more you move out of kind of a contracted state into this bigger understanding, because we are a citizen of the great nature of dependent arising.
Wait, say that again.
We're a citizen, you know, the great nature of I say contingency sometimes for pratityasamutpada or, you know, dependent arising. We are part of this world, this infinite network of relationships. You know, we're a part of that.
We have dependently arisen.
Yeah, we are everything. Even our thoughts, our emotions, our ideas, our all of our experience, our bodies. There's nothing in this world that doesn't come about, is not an expression of dependent arising. So that's our biggest citizenship. You know, we could say like we're a U.S. citizen or a, you know, we come from a town or a family.
We like those fixed concepts so that you don't have to, is it so you don't have to feel? Is it so you don't have to experience? What is the point of actually shutting down?
I don't know. This is something really we need to ask ourselves. You know, how does it help? What happens when we shut down around another person or another group of people, or we think we're right about something? Like, mm-hmm. How helpful is that? And is it possible to be fully functional and open at the same time? Because I think people think if you're open-minded, you lose your focus. But I actually have never experienced that.
Right.
I think when my mind is open, I'm much more clear. I see the possibilities and the relationships. I don't have negative emotions arise to cloud my discernment, you know. So this is, you know, this also is very much questioned in the book, and what I call faithing, because faithing means you don't have to close down around beliefs, and you don't have to doubt. There's another alternative, which means you can be engaged and open at the same time.
And that was your last book, The Power of an Open Question.
Yeah.
Yeah, you looked at that, and so what is the power of an open question? And it's this. It's that you allow more in.
Yes, exactly. You don't shut down around you can bear witness, you know. And I think sometimes we don't have the ability to bear witness. Like, there's a tendency to want to know, to hold on. It doesn't mean you can't know, like you can't navigate life. You can navigate life much better when your mind is open. But we can't know, in the world of relationships, we can't know anything in a determinate way, because it all depends. So in order to kind of know something in the determinate way, we have to close down, like become a fundamentalist.
Yeah.
We always think fundamentalism is just those kind of crazy people out there. But fundamentalism means you look at someone and you think you know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think things exist as you just simply think they do. And it's impossible, because it's all relative.
Openness isn't vague or directionless,
no.
And it's not impractical.
That's right.
Right?
That's right. It's very practical.
It's very
That's
practical.
The point. Yeah.
You're listening to author Elizabeth Mattis Namyal on KHSU on Through the Eyes of Women. Her new book, The Logic of Faith, A Buddhist Approach to Finding Certainty Beyond Belief and Doubt. Yeah, well, I think that's probably one of the reasons people hold on to their ideas, because it feels like it has direction and it feels like you're more solid. And so, you know, the point of exploring these concepts is so that you don't hold up that notion that you're super solid.
That's right, yeah. And then you find yourself more functional. You find yourself flexible, less negative emotions, and much more understanding of who you are in relationship.
Mm-hmm.
To what's happening around you, because you're coming out of your kind of myopic, puny little universe and starting to see how the world works.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, what I say, pratityasamutpada is talked about is, you know, the nature of reality. And wisdom is the ability to see the nature of reality. But what I've been saying lately is it's actually just about being realistic. If you think someone exists in just one way, that's not a realistic way of looking at the world. Or if you think you can fix this broken world and make it another way, that's not a way of looking at the world realistically. I'm not saying the world is broken and it needs to be fixed. It's just that the world is not one thing. You know, the world is dynamic and rambunctious, and it won't, you know, you can't capture it in an idea. And so therefore, saying the world is not fixable means that, you know, a lot of people feel that they want to change people and change the world, but the world is not one thing to change into another thing. It's so we have to look realistically at the world in order to actually be able to serve. Because one thing I must say before we finish is that because everything leans, everything we do is important. You know, everything we do matters and has a reverberating effect.
Right. Just because you learn how to understand dependent arising doesn't mean things don't mean anything.
Yeah, in fact, they mean more. That's the point of it.
Lots of points in your new book. Again, it's a really great read. It's out by Shambhala. And please give out your website. Your teaching schedule is there. You're going to be in the Bay Area. So please give out your website if you would be kind enough to do so.
Yes, it's Elizabeth Mattis, M-A-T-T-I-S. Namgyel.com. ElizabethMattisNamgyel.com.
Elizabeth, so great to hear your voice.
You too, Daniel. I hope maybe I'll see you in the Bay Area. I'd love that.
I think I'm going to try and push that. It'd be really fun.
It'd be great. I really appreciate talking to you, Daniel.
Really, I appreciate it too. It really makes my heart swell with lots of joy and pain.
Yeah. Well, that's what we're saying. We have to include it all, right?
Yeah. I think we're good at that.
Yes, we have to be. I think we're getting there.
Well, safe travels coming west.
Okay. Lots of love.
Okay. Love you, Elizabeth.
You too.
Okay.
Bye,
take good
Daniel.
Care. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I've been your host, Danielle Orr. I've been speaking with Elizabeth Mattis Namgyel about her new book, The Logic of Faith. For more information about Elizabeth and her teaching schedule, ElizabethMattisNamgyel.com. Through the Eyes of Women is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University. Thanks to today's editor and engineer, Jesse Eden, and to our entire Through the Eyes of Women team. You can listen to this show again at any time at Through the Eyes of Women's blog at khsuwomen.com. Join us again at 1:30 next Monday here on KHSU.